This month, our learning and worship theme is heroism, which has given me the chance to think deeply about who I learn from, about who influences my life most profoundly. And the names that have been coming to mind are not the rich, famous, and powerful people who were featured in the textbooks of my childhood. They're not the ones that grace the covers of magazines in the checkout line at Woodman's. Some such public figures are certainly heroic. But the heroes I've been appreciating and talking about this month are the individuals who don't get included in the history books. Sometimes they're even just the people we know in everyday life. One of my favorite everyday people is the son of my childhood babysitter. He is one of the most curious people I've ever met, a constant role model who reminds me to be open to new learning in this interesting, complex world. When he was 7, he was in that common stage of childhood known as the obsessed with things with working parts phase. During one afternoon that we were able to spend together, he wanted to explore my car. This is when I really solidified my place as a great mentor in his life. Because not only did I let him sit in the driver's seat with the seatbelt buckled, but I let him honk the horn as much as he wanted. The neighbors were thrilled. We moved on to the many other marvels of a 1992 Honda Accord. And while we were bonding over resetting the trip meter, he confided in me with serious pride that when he grew up, he wanted to be a truck driver and also an astronaut. And I told him, without thinking before I spoke, that being both was sadly impossible. He was going to have to pick either one or the other, as if he couldn't even want to be both. I can't imagine this felt good to hear. And I immediately wondered why I had been so quick to dismiss even the dream of a life that involved both trucks and space travel. After all, if my mother-in-law could work 2 full-time jobs and raise 10 children at the same time, talk about heroic, then who was I to say what was possible? What was I bothered by? That just the desire for more than one professional occupation was complicated and therefore it just shouldn't be allowed? No one deserves to be told they can only have a single interest or one goal or a simple identity or just one religion. I know this because I grew up Unitarian Universalist and Jewish in a family that is both. Yet for many years, especially growing up, I felt like I had to pick, that I couldn't be both a Jew and a UU at the same time. Of course, we have no rule against being in 2 religions at once. In fact, as UUs, we tend to pride ourselves on celebrating diversity and valuing difference. That is a strength of ours. Yet there is also tension in Unitarian Universalism about people who come from or claim more than one faith at once. They can sometimes get deemed a little too complicated, as if they're trying to be inconvenient by not just leaving their other tradition and being only at home in Unitarian Universalism. This is understandable. Discomfort about multiple identities isn't only in Unitarian Universalism. There is tension in our whole culture about those both and places, those in-between spaces, and the people who defy simple categories and can't be easily regulated. I think it's why our culture, with its many official forms to fill out, can be so frustrating for a person whose racial and ethnic identity encompasses more than one box, or a person whose gender identity is represented in none of the options provided. Falling into that invisible both-and category can be a recipe for feeling like an outsider, for feeling like one who doesn't belong. In fact, we all belong, and our UU history agrees. We have a legacy of multi-religious people, of those both-anders, complicated heroes who have owned their complexity and used it to help shape Unitarian Universalism into what it is today. My story for you now is about a Jewish man from many years ago who was a part of the growth and evolution of Unitarian Universalism. Rabbi Solomon Hirsch Sonnenschein, Sonnenschein is sunshine in German, lived from 1839 to 1908. Originally from Hungary, he came to the U.S. in the 1860s, during the early days of the Reform Judaism movement. And he is one example of how Unitarianism and Judaism have overlapped. Unitarians and Reform Jews emerged in this country from different social settings. Unitarians were U.S. natives, generally, with more class and ethnic and economic privilege. Their movement, our movement, evolved from Protestant Christianity. In contrast, the American Jewish reformers tended to be immigrants from Central Europe, especially Germany, or the children of those immigrants. Yet despite different cultural backgrounds, reformers and Unitarians both wrestled with the same religious dilemmas. How can religious liberalism be reconciled with religious tradition, they asked. What's the relationship between the older traditions and the new and radical? How can tradition be redefined so it encourages us to make our religious history relevant to our present and to where we want to go in the future? These are not such distant questions. Both movements also had similar eschatologies, which means similar ideas about what happens at the end of life. This is the branch of theology that cares about whether or not our planet itself will reach some kind of a final end. For both Unitarians and Reformers, God was not going to wipe clean the world with a fiery apocalypse. Heaven and hell mattered less than an ethical life, well lived in the here and now. Recognizing these alliances, some Reform rabbis and Unitarian ministers started pulpit and bima exchanges. Their congregations set up subscription exchanges so they could read each other's newspapers and other publications. The religions noticed how much they had in common. And a small group of Jews and Unitarians even began calling for the marriage of their two movements, much like the Unitarians and the Universalists accomplished so many years later. Rabbi Sonnenschein, or Sunshine Rabbi, was an important contributor to this process. In 1869, while serving a St. Louis synagogue, he wrote and delivered a series of lectures called Reform Judaism and the Unitarian Church, in which he named similarities between the two religions. For example, both movements believed in the strict oneness or unity of God. The points of disharmony, he emphasized, were not theological. They weren't ideological at all. They were social and cultural, like the preference for the Christian or the Jewish name. Unitarians and Jews showed up at their respective worship services and expected really different things to happen. In a shared service, would the liturgy be in Hebrew? And what about communion, a standard Unitarian practice at that time? These were major questions, he acknowledged. Still, he said, Reform Judaism and Unitarianism were running parallel histories. Each was fighting for tolerance, freedom, and the religion of humanity. Religious tendencies varied only in the shading. That's how he put it, only in the shading. So here's the part that isn't so warm and fuzzy. Sonnenschein had some grave concerns about unification. Who, he wanted to know, would be the founding father, we might say parent, of a combined religion? Would it be Moses or Jesus? Would Saturday or Sunday prevail as the day of rest? Christian oppression against Jews raged on. And the ugly truth is that the Unitarians of his time felt no great urgency to oppose or organize against anti-Semitism. If the faiths became one, who would work on behalf of persecuted Jews across the globe? Ultimately, Sonnenschein couldn't abandon his group identity. He wouldn't turn away from the task of Jewish self-preservation. Religious unity, he concluded, was therefore still but a dream. So, then, he had a solution to that. The task at hand was for Reformed Jews and Unitarians to fulfill what he called their inner missions. Reformers must disseminate the teachings of progress and reason to more Orthodox Jews. And the Unitarians, he instructed, must take similar truths to Baptists, Presbyterians, and Lutherans. This talk about joint inner missions was not well received. Sonnenschein's approval of Unitarian ideas was controversial, both in his congregation and within the Reform movement. Personal tension brewed as well. Sonnenschein may have been a heroic visionary in the public realm, but his private life was in shambles. He was an alcoholic in a mutually miserable and unfaithful marriage. That's the thing about heroes. Some of them are really human, warts and all. It's probably easy to understand why Sonnenschein's situation made his congregation nervous. It all came to a head at a funeral in 1886. Sonnenschein became furious when he arrived at the home of the deceased and discovered that the mirrors had been covered with fabric. Covered mirrors are a mourning ritual that he and the other radical reformers of his day regarded as empty and backward, although it's still a very common practice in Judaism today. Even secular Jewish families like my own, who consider themselves progressive and not particularly devout, observe it. When he showed up, it became quickly apparent that Sonnenschein had been drinking. He was drunk. After the funeral, in the living room of the grieving family, a fist fight erupted between the rabbi and a member of his congregation. That's actually not the punchline. The brawlers had to be separated by the board president. I don't know if Kate McQuillan's here, if that was in her job description here. When all was said and done, and much was said on many sides, Sonnenschein offered his resignation, and it was accepted. So, what now? Even before his leave-taking was public in his own community, Sonnenschein headed to Boston and to the Unitarians. He preached at a local Unitarian church and entered into top-secret negotiations with leaders of the American Unitarian Association, long before the Unitarians and the Universalists joined together in 1961. They met to discuss Sonnenschein becoming a Unitarian clergy person. I can imagine why he was attracted to noble, historic East Coast Unitarianism, which claims so many of this country's prestigious people from founding fathers and onward. Judaism doesn't have such a widely esteemed legacy because its influence has been limited and suppressed by anti-Semitism. Sonnenschein was tired of having his intellectual contributions devalued by those outside of the Jewish community. Perhaps he hoped that the privilege of a Unitarian platform could help secure support and encouragement for his passionate ideas about how to make the world a better and more loving place. Sonnenschein felt tenderly towards Unitarianism. He cared deeply about our free intellectual tradition. He admired it. He mourned that he had found religious leadership in his own tradition too narrow. That's what he wrote in a letter to a friend, that it was too narrow for his creative and expansive worldview. He felt at home with Unitarians. Sonnenschein was close friends with the Reverend William G. Eliot, who is a very well-known minister in our movement historically. He was pastor of St. Louis's Unitarian Church of the Messiah. Sonnenschein sometimes preached at Eliot's church. In nearby cities, he occasionally filled in for Unitarian clergy when they were away from their pulpits. Ultimately, Unitarian leadership did not encourage Rabbi Sonnenschein to formally apply for a Unitarian congregation, and so he did not. When the issue of baptism had arisen, for example, Rabbi Sonnenschein rejected the possibility of his ever performing such a ritual. And this was a real and valid sticking point. I wish I could tell you exactly why the American Unitarian Association discouraged, if not out and out rejected, the rabbi. I wish I could offer a glimpse of their conversation or their decision-making process. But from the Unitarian Universalist perspective, I have never been able to discover a single word written about him. Jewish scholarship has been slightly more interested. Dr. Benny Kraut researches the relationships between Reform Judaism and liberal Protestantism in the U.S., and he has written about Sonnenschein. My words today are based on his work. Kraut believes that if Rabbi Sonnenschein had been offered a Unitarian congregation, he would have said yes. This strikes me profoundly. It's not a question of what could have happened if our movement had had a Unitarian rabbi, although that's certainly something to think about, isn't it? Rather, I'm struck by what it means that Unitarian Universalism doesn't seem to find this interesting, doesn't consider this an important event in the formation of our beloved faith. Kraut's interest in Sonnenschein is about what it means to U.S. Jewish history and what it tells us about the early Reform movement. For our purposes here, I wonder what this story means for and to and about Unitarian Universalism. It's a faded bit of history, but it's firm evidence that Reformed Jews and Unitarians shared deep conversations at pivotal points in their histories. The two traditions my mother and father brought to their partnership and to their children, to me, have intersected powerfully and thoughtfully in this country. For us all to know this enhances our knowledge and experience of Unitarian Universalism and of the people who are at home in it. I serve as the president of UU's for Jewish Awareness, which is one of the many groups that represent all of the UU source traditions. Right now, I'm in the process of co-editing a book of essays called Jewish Voices in Unitarian Universalism, which is due out in 2014. There's already a wonderful volume called Christian Voices, and I understand that our Buddhist UU group is hard at work on their own collection. Skinner House, our UU publisher, invited me into this project because they see part of their job as offering resources to Unitarian Universalists who want to go past a superficial affirmation of diversity, although affirming diversity is important, and actually grapple with complexity, complexity of identity, experience, culture, and world. It's not just going to be a book for Jewish UUs. We sometimes like to call ourselves Junitarians because we think that's clever. But I hope that this will be a book for everyone, just like the Christian and the Buddhist ones are for all of us too. In unique ways, we each hold multiple identities. You might be multicultural, maybe even in a way that isn't always perceived by others. Or maybe you're a snowbird, and home just means more than one zip code or time zone. You might be bisexual or pansexual, and not sure where you're truly welcome in community because it changes based on your current relationship. You might be a truck driver and an astronaut. Whoever we are, whatever multitudes and multiplicities we contain, we need to know of others who are like us. In our religious movements and our other communities, we are surrounded by people with wonderful and complicated identities. When Unitarian Universalism is at its best and brightest, it encourages us to explore our own complexities because it gives us a whole community that welcomes and even loves the diversities of everyone's fullness in all our complicated, messy, heroic humanness. What makes Sana shine an everyday hero in my eyes is that he bequeaths to us so many questions. What does it mean that he was almost a Unitarian rabbi? Why cling to the Jewish or the Christian name? Does Unitarian Universalism still have Christian privilege? Sonnenschein's legacy deserves to be honored and challenged, woven into the fabric of our UU story. Depth of engagement can help us stretch and grow in our UU identities as people who care about making our world bigger and stronger for all who inhabit it. This is what it means theologically when we talk or sing about building bridges. This is how we build a new way, how we move toward being a religious movement that reaches out to one another. To engage so deeply is an act of generosity. It's a blessing that is both a proclamation and an affirmation. Unitarian Universalism has a tremendous capacity to embrace so many precious people with so many precious identities. When I told my young friend that he could aspire only to a single job, his little face fell. And while we were hanging out, I kept thinking about that stupid thing I had just said. And so after I let him lock and unlock and relock and unlock the doors, I realized that I hadn't said to him what I really meant. And so as we headed inside, I told him, "It is really cool that you want to be a truck driver and an astronaut. I bet those are both great jobs." What I really meant then is what I really mean today. In all your complexity, you are lovable. There is enough room for all of who you are. May it always be so.